A-ha's American success culminated in their Grammy nomination 1986 for Best New Artist category, which was eventually won by Sade. The band has released 10 albums and 4 live albums. And during 2010, believe it or not, this band earned an estimated 500 million Norwegian kroner, making them one of the top 50 highest grossing bands in the world. I forgot to translate that into actually New Zealand dollars, but Guy Williams, not
that's probably a pretty big mistake there, Wallace. We have no idea how much a Norwegian kroner is. That could be like $75 for all we know.
That's a very good point. But this is probably a bit before your time, Yeah?
No, everyone, it's like Whitney Houston, I Want to Dance with Somebody. Like, just everyone knows that song. It's a classic through all the years. It was interesting you said that it was the first Norwegian song to go to number one in the US.
Yeah.
Because, A, it's interesting that we compare success just to doing well in America. And secondly, surely they're the only Norwegian artist to go number one in the US. How many Norwegian artists do you hear about ever? It's not very common at all.
That is true. That is true. Anyway, good song. Good song. And I'm sure, Alexia, first time around, you were dancing to this wonderful track, right?
No, I was just Googling kroner, actually. It's 17 cents to the dollar. 17 to 7 cents to the kroner.
Yes, so how much would that be?
Well, I've forgotten how many kroner you said that worth. 500,000?
500 million.
Okay.
Anyway, think about it.
83 million. Yes, I was dancing to that. Thank you for revealing my age.
Great idea, says Carol, to intensify inner city suburbs when the services are upgraded to support the increased number of people living there. At the moment, we have combined an aged sewer wastewater system, so harbour water is at risk. The central interceptor is not enough on its own. The feeder system really needs badly upgrading. And listen to this, a big hello to our listener from the US. I'm a dropout of mechanical engineering, age 18. I returned to university 23 after buying a one-way ticket to Amsterdam. I finally graduated at 27 and now I'm teaching human rights at the University of California, Berkeley, using all my knowledge of satellite imagery and useless geography. I absorbed far more studying from the age of 23 to 27. From passion comes creativity and intellectual curiosity. So Stephanie is writing from the University of California, Berkeley, and that's where she is listening and resides and loves her career. So, Stephanie, hello.
Can I say, that is bizarre, someone's listening from Berkeley, but also so lovely that we have some intelligent listeners out there. Can I just apologise for everything I've said so far, but rent a dog is a good idea.
That's right. 1 hour of fetch at the local park. Guy Williams, Alexia Russell with me this afternoon. You're on the panel, RNZ National. Well, this week the book industry was rocked by news that a tech startup for book recommendations had received $500,000 in grant money. Now, the website Narrative Muse, M-U-S-E, plans to use the money to connect Aotearoa's readers with the books that they want to read. But as reported by Steve Brawnius in Newsroom this morning, publishers and writers have criticised the funding, saying the site directs people to purchase from offshore sites like Amazon rather than directed to local bookstores and does not do enough to support local writers either. With us to discuss is Fergus Barrowman, publisher at Victoria University of Wellington Press. Fergus, kia ora. Welcome to the panel.
Kia ora, Wallace. Thanks for having me.
What's all the hullabaloo about? Now, sounds like that this site is just trying to connect readers with books, and surely that is a good thing for local writers and publishers.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. In principle, anything that brings to readers the books they want, the books that they don't yet know are the books they want, and takes our books out to readers is good. But it's the particularity of the site, which is not a startup. It's been around for 3 or 4 years and has had absolutely no cut through, because I certainly hadn't heard of it until this news broke. So this site, which is one of those things where you have to go and join and sort of give your details and answer questions, and it gives you recommendations, and then it sends all of its commercial traffic offshore to Amazon and iTunes. In a situation where the New Zealand book world, my little sector, struggles on with on the smell of an oily rag, and particularly under COVID. We've had cancellations of the Christchurch Book Festival, and other event planners are struggling to find audiences. Writers are doing it hard. And in our world, $500,000 is a huge amount of money, and we can all just see ways in which that could have been applied.
Is that a part of it, Fergus? In the creative industries and also in the book sphere, you might see grants of a few thousand, tens of thousands perhaps at the top end. Next minute, there's this $500,000 amount being handed out. Is the amount part of the issue?
Oh, the amount is definitely part of the issue. It is so out of scale with what happens in our sector, especially to something which no one's heard of and appears to have no connection.
All right. Let's start with Guy Williams. Firstly, Guy, had you heard of the website Narrative Muse? Been around for 3 or 4 years.
Wallace, you know as well as anyone that I can't read. However, yeah. I did see on the website Twitter today that someone was defending it, saying it has been quite good in pairing people up with kind of like, like less, more alternative types of, books about different types of sexual diversity and stuff like that. Like I did see some people defending it online, and I thought maybe there is some merit in it. It seems kind of a bit harsh for us all to pile on the first day kind of thing. With this $500,000, maybe they could do something amazing with it.
Is that a fair point, Fergus? Why becry a new-ish website some significant amount of money? Perhaps they could connect the dots and join Aotearoa with the world, book-wise.
Oh, if they made it succeed, that would be wonderful. I mean, one of the staggering things about it to me is that there's only a 25-word description on the ministry's website. And when Steve Brawnius interviewed them, they had absolutely nothing to say. There was no kōrero that they could put up to say what they intended to do or why they were doing it. And the principal of the site seemed to know nothing about our sector. So that's the problem there. Maybe it would in a sort of a blue sky way, but those of us who swim in the sea, who are in the New Zealand book sector, it's actually really easy for a motivated person to find news.
Were there any New Zealand books on the site, Fergus?
Oh, look, there are half a dozen I could quickly find. Both of Eleanor Catton's books were there. They both went through, clicked through to the international editions of those books, and the big internet retailers. So that was a personal blow to me. There was a book of short stories by Tracy Slaughter that we published. That was our edition then. So there would be some return to Tracy and us, but again, it clicks through to an overseas retailer.
Oh.
So it's not playing, in our team at all.
Okay, Alexia Russell.
Yeah, this is New Zealand money paid for by the New Zealand taxpayer, and there needs to be some assurances that New Zealanders will benefit, and that's the premise of every piece of government funding, handing out money to any part of the creative sector. So it's kind of weird that if you read Steve Brownies' story, which is quite funny, that she couldn't even remember Becky Manawatu's surname when she's written the best-selling book of the year. She doesn't seem too connected to the New Zealand industry.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, that tiny bit on the ministry's website said nothing about supporting New Zealand writers and filmmakers and musicians. It was only about audiences finding diverse content. And, audiences in New Zealand can find content. It's very easy for a motivated person to go out and find it. What we don't have is any kind of platform that, puts things in front of people who don't yet know that that's what they're looking for. But this kind of very old-fashioned recommendations website is just never going to do that.
All right. Fergus Berryman. Sorry to interrupt you there. That's Fergus Berryman, publisher at Victoria University of Wellington Press. Have you heard of the site Narrative Muse? Have you joined it? Be interested to hear your views there. To this, and we have to move on because our next guest has to be somewhere else. But anyway, site preparation for the long-awaited National Erebus Memorial in Auckland finally begun today, despite a rocky start this morning, with a standoff between opponents, construction crew and security guards at Auckland's Parnell Rose Garden. Residents said two trucks with fences, another car and trailer, and about 30 security guards arrived at 9 a.m. today to be greeted by about 20 opponents at a cone barrier, reported Todd Nile and Adam Jacobson. The memorial, Te Paeranga Atata Sky Song, is to be erected at Dove Meyer Robinson Park. As I said, it's known as the Parnell Rose Gardens. With us to discuss is Dame Anita Glavich, who is leading the protest. Tenakwe, Dame Nida.
Kia ora, and can I correct that we are actually protectors rather than protesters, because our role is to protect a near on 200-year-old tupuna rākau called the Pahutukawa tree and the whenua in which it stands on.
Explain a little bit for those of us who are not so familiar. What's the issue here? How long do you plan to stay there?
The issue, we will stay there to the end. The issue is the process that was declared non-notifiable. That's the issue. And we've got an ombudsman coming, looking into our complaint about that process. And the ministry has chosen to totally ignore and cross arahui whenua. Now, every Māori tribe in this country ought to be concerned about that. This is a Crown agency that intends to breach the tapu of a rāhui that's been placed to protect that 200-year-old tree. You now, touch that tree and you will be touching something that was alive and breathing at the time of the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi. Does the Ministry of Heritage not care about that?
This Erebus Memorial, years and years in the planning, a lot of setbacks, Parnell Rose Gardens, a beautifully designed, empathetic memorial to honour 257 people who died on the country's worst air crash. You've got this tree. It's going to be protected, I understand. There's no way it'll be damaged.
Not.
That's what they said.
There is no Māori arborist report on that. There is no cultural report on it by the arborist who did it either. There is no cultural input into the design. I'd love to carry this on, but I'm sorry, I have to go.
All right, that is Dame Anita Glavich there, leading the, well, they're the protectors rather than protesters, said Dame Glavich. All right, Alexi Russell.
That was a thrilling debate. That was compelling radio. I'm disappointed that's over. That was Wallace versus the Dame. That was very exciting stuff. Great job, guys.
Alexia, you would have been looking at this for Newsroom, surely, this years-long Erebus Memorial at the Parnell Rose Gardens. What do you make of this issue?
Well, there's so many complications for it. Number one, I just can't understand why it's not, you know, liked, because it's a, like you say, it's a beautifully designed memorial. Number two, we have put this off for so long, and those people, Erebus victims, deserve some kind of tribute or memorial. And, you know, other places have been cycled through before they finally settled on this one. Also, Ngāti Whātua has approved of this. So this seems to be conflict within the tribal area. Half of them say it's okay and Dame Nida doesn't.
And can you also see the other side of it there? You've got this significant Pūtikawa tree, so old. These sorts of heritage significant areas must be protected too.
Yeah, but it's not going to be chopped down, as you said. Mm. And anyway, that area is full of significant Pūtikawa trees. Yeah. It's, you know, there are hundreds of them and they'll all be about the same age.
It's, Guy?
You know...
You don't want to hear my views, Wallace.
All right.
Not how you hear, Guy.
Knock it down, put up an apartment block, high-density housing, rent a dog business out the front. There you go. Fixed in 5 minutes.
Oh, wonderful. A lot of Guy Williams haters coming through already. I'll read them out at the end of the show. no, Guy. No, not at all. Wonderful to have you on. Right. It is almost 12 to 5. The panel, RNZ National, now on a completely different note. If you haven't yet made plans for the weekend, Guy Williams has an idea. This Saturday is National Nude Gardening Day. The New Zealand Naturist Federation says that while the while the masks may be on, the kit is off, with members heading out to the veggie patch to enjoy some sunshine and grow a bit of extra food for the community. This is all part of National Gardening Week, an annual celebration with a different theme each year. This year is Grow to Give. And on the line we have Constance Gervasi from the New Zealand Naturist Federation. Constance, kia ora, and welcome to the program.
Thank you. Kia ora, Wallace. Nice to talk to you today.
First of all, tell us a little bit about the Naturist Clubs in Aotearoa celebrating National Nude Gardening Day. What's special about this year?
Well, I think, you know, in general, I mean, we as a naturist, you know, we get our kit off all the time. So it's not anything, you know, unusual for us, but it's really wonderful to pair with Yates and to, you know, help the community by the theme this year being Grow to Give. And, you know, growing an extra row to donate vegetables to families in need and things. So, you know, and it's a wonderful thing that we can do, you know, to help people in need. So,
Can I just go back to basics? Question one, what is it about gardening with your clothes off that we like or you
well,
like?
Well, it's wonderful to feel the sun on your body for a start. I mean, that vitamin D is so good for you. The second benefit is wonderful for your mental health, actually, just reconnecting with nature, you know, your hands in the dirt, you know, just, you know, listening to the birds and the bees and, you know, being in the nature is an amazing thing. And I think that for too many people these days, we don't do that enough, you know, connect with nature. We're, you know, inside, stuck on our devices.
But you've heard the theme of our show, intensification is going to be the new theme word. We're going to be living, you know, back to back, three stories high. Next minute, you've got your next door neighbour, Bill, clothes off, pruning the roses. Is that what we want to see?
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with the human body. It doesn't matter what shape or size you are, as long as you're comfortable in your own skin. And I think that media has, you know, done a terrible thing over the years, you know, saying that you must be such and such a size and look a certain way. And, you know, it's really healthy to be accepting of your own body.
Oh, well, let's bring our panellists. Let's go to Alexia Russell, because she lives on the North Shore. And this is you do the stuff on the shore.
What has that got to do with nude gardening?
I thought it was a stronghold.
I love gardening. I've got a lovely little garden that I've, over the last couple of years, we've made some changes and made my garden. However, being fair of skin and freckled, I put clothes on when I go out and do the gardening in particular.
Well, I mean, you know, there's sensible times. Like, I mean, I don't go out in the sun between 11 and 4 as a general rule, because the sun is too strong. You know, so it's being sensible. And, you know, if it's cold, we put clothes on as well. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, all power to you. Yeah, absolutely. Why wouldn't you?
Guy?
I've got no objection to it at all.
I've got a more general nudist question. And that is, you say, it's so easy to say, we should all love our bodies and be comfortable in our own skin. But as someone who's always hated my body, how is it possible to be comfortable in your own skin? How do we achieve this? I want to know.
Well, you know, the first hurdle to naturism is getting your head around the fact of social nudity. And at the end of the day, people don't judge you or they don't care what you look like. And once you get past that, then you do become more comfortable in your own skin.
Really good messages here, Constance. So on a final note, if there is, if someone listened to this going, I might give this a try, you know, Saturday, National Nude Gardening Day, what's the first step?
Well, they could just, you know, go out into your own garden, and it doesn't matter whether you've got a small, you know, few pots on the balcony or a small patch, but, you know, just to get outside and enjoy the sun and get your hands in the dirt and, you know, do some planting or some weeding. But, you know, if they wanted to come to a club, well, I mean, unfortunately at the moment, a lot of clubs are closed to visitors because of the alert level that we're in.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're welcome to come once we're out of lockdowns and things like that, and just see for yourself, because we have about 18 clubs in New Zealand. The other thing that's happening this weekend with Nude Gardening Day, as well as the Yates thing, is Lynn River do a nude photo competition. So you could send a photo of yourself nude in your garden doing something like that, and send that off to win some prizes. So can be quite creative in that area. Bit of fun.
Did you say, is there 18 nude gardening clubs or 18 nudist clubs in New Zealand?
Well, we call it naturist now, Guy, not nudist. But yes, there's about 18 clubs in New Zealand. Yeah, that's all right.
Wow.
The most southern club is called Southern Naturally. It's near Invercargill, and that is the most southern naturist club in the world, which is pretty unique.
Wow.
And yeah, there's
they must go out like 2 days a year max, I reckon. 2 days a year max.
You'd be surprised. Be surprised. You actually get your hard enough, eh?
Yeah, indeed. We say go for gold, Constance. It's lovely to have you on the program, it's and all the best for Saturday for National Nude Gardening Day. That is Constance Zavazzi of the Naturist Federation. Alexi Russell, serious note though, listen to that though. Have you ever thought of just having a go? Just 11:30 a.m.
No.
You make a cup of tea. You take your clothes off.
No, that's a no. The most
this is verging on sexual harassment, will be
last Saturday when I actually put my togs on and went for the first sea swim of the year.
Right. Yeah,
that's
good
not
going to
happen again soon because it was freezing.
Yeah, good on you. What about you, Guy? You know, you get up, you have a coffee, you bake some scones, you go, oh, it's 11:45. I'm going to put a hat on, take my singlet off, take my undies off, head out there and do some shoveling in the compost.
I'm going to be honest with you, Wallace. That is my worst nightmare. And I just do not want my privates anywhere near rose bushes in the Parnell Rose Gardens or anywhere else in New Zealand. The idea of that terrifies me. So I'm scared of being nude and I'm scared of thorns and prickly bushes. It terrifies me. I support them.
Right.
Good luck to them, Kia Kaha, but I will not be doing that this weekend, unfortunately.
Someone asks, do you have to wear your mask? Yes, you do. And someone says, look, the problem here is people sexualise naked bodies. Seeing an ordinary person just freaks them out and they feel shame of their own. Guy, join a club. There are small steps. Walk around in your own home naked, take a towel to sit on, and then you just get confidence that way. So,
and you'll be doing this, Wallace, this weekend?
I've actually got no problem with this because I, you know, going to the gym every morning when things used to be open, you know, it's just, we're people, Alexia, we're people. All right.
Sorry, now you're telling us that you do nude gymming as well? Wait, that's too much.
Talking about the changing rooms. Anyway, finally, we've got to discuss this. An opinion piece in the Herald today by Vera Alves titled North Shore Influencer Party, A Portrait of Privilege in Times of Pandemic. Vera says the flagrant rule-breaking by North Shore partygoers and posted shamelessly online shows that those with privilege are less likely to follow the rules, that we're not all in this together thanks to people like the rule-breakers who don't have any skin in the game. Things like health problems or financial struggles. And I just wanted to ask you, Alexia, do you agree that if you have an amount of privilege like this, you're less likely to follow the rules? Is that an angle, perhaps?
No. And number one, it's not the North Shore. It was Redvale, which is miles away from the North Shore. And number two, I'm so sick of this. You're privileged and it's your entitlement. It's youthful stupidity. That's just what it is, stupidity. Just like the young touch team that has been meeting every Friday up the road from us to play a game of touch during lockdown, and you can certainly not judge them to be privileged, rich, or entitled, but they're certainly stupid. This whole hitting on people because they have a bit of money and deciding that they're the scourge of the earth is, I'm over it. It's just really tedious.
But privilege doesn't necessarily mean you have money. Like when you say they're just young idiots, that it's youth privilege. It's the privilege of knowing that you're less likely to die from COVID and you can be more free. And I definitely agree with it.
Everyone from outside the North Shore seems to think that everyone on the North Shore is rich and privileged. Huh. So they're the first target of, you know, this sort of judgment.
Yeah, it's clearly...
Alexia...
I was going to say...
It's we've got hit a nerve, obviously.
Yeah, you've hit a nerve. We've got it's got on your skin, Alexia, hasn't it?
Well, what? It's, there's so many people breaking the rules around Auckland at the moment. And they're not, you know, they're not uniformly referred to by this in the same language.
Yeah. No, lovely to have you on. Both, you've been wonderful. Guy Williams, Alexia Russell, thank you very much for your time. I'm Wallace Chapman. Karen Hayes tomorrow. Stay tuned. Lisa Owen with Checkpoint up next. Bye.